Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
This is Dmitry Samarov from Chicago, Illinois. And I love listening to Vish Khanna's Creative Control because whether he's talking to a favorite musician or actor of mine or someone I've never heard of, it's as if he's introducing me to a new friend. And the way things are going, couldn't you use a new friend? Listen now.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Mark Arm is a legendary musician, songwriter, and singer based in Seattle, Washington. Since 1988, Arm has been the lead singer and lyricist and a guitarist in the influential band Mudhoney, which is currently also comprised of guitarist Steve Turner, drummer Dan Peters, and bassist Guy Madison. Mudhoney's 12th album is a wondrous one called Plastic Eternity, and it's available around the world on April 7th, 2023, via Sub Pop Records. Mark and I reconnected recently to have a talk about things like the state of the world and how that state is reflected in the lyrics and sound of Plastic Eternity, his work in the Sub Pop warehouse, and how that role informs his view of the strange and also normal ways in which people are consuming vinyl records these days. Streaming services and physical objects, bemusement and frustration, social media, cults, and the things that people want to believe, Pear Ubu's unheralded guitarist Tom Herman, surfing, and sharks, Steve Turner's forthcoming book, Mud Ride, the new Mudhoney song, Little Dogs, and also why Mark loves Little Dogs, how Mudhoney is working together right now and will likely work together from now on, new and unreleased Mudhoney songs, touring, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you, who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary source of good, clean revenue for all the work that goes into me making this podcast for you as much as I do. It's usually once a week. This week is twice a week. Sometimes it's twice a week. It's a lot of work, but I'm not complaining. I like it. It's fun, but still, some money would be good. If you want to make a flexible monthly donation, please consider doing so at patreon.com/creativecontrol. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and very friendly staff on site who will happily help you find whatever it is you're looking for. But say you're not in Edmonton or Calgary and you want to use a Blackbird. Well, you go to blackbird.ca and you want to order records, right? Maybe you want to order Plastic Eternity by Mudhoney. Well, you type all of that information in where it tells you to do that on their website, and then it'll come to your house if they can get it to you. So for more information about Blackbird Music, visit their website, blackbird.ca. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in my old hometown, Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 764 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Mark Arm of Mudhoney, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Good, Vish. How are you?
I'm super well. It's nice to see you again. First of all, America does not seem like it's doing good. Is America bad? I just thought I'd get a Canadian exclusive. How's America going?
Oh, I don't know. Is anywhere really good right now?
No. Actually, that's a good point. My question was informed a little bit by what I hear on this record, not just the news as we're speaking. So, no, I don't think so. Maybe New Zealand. I keep hearing New Zealand is nice. You ever been to New Zealand?
I have. New Zealand is nice.
I guess.
I think it's kind of a hard place to relocate to.
Yes. Have you pondered moving out of your country ever?
Oh, sure. I haven't found that place yet.
No. In recent years, particularly, or throughout your life?
Throughout my life, but probably more in recent years, you know. I mean, I am 61. It would be nice to find a place that's warm and tropical, has good surf, but also has a good community of friends. And that's kind of the hard part of just like moving away.
Yeah.
It's just like, who are going to be the random people you're suddenly hanging out with? You know, like at least in Seattle, we have like a old friends that we love and cherish that we hang out with and see at least occasionally.
Right. Yes. Fair enough. You know, the utopia you described there sounded sort of like Australia. One of your guys there is in Australia, isn't he?
Yeah. That's also kind of a hard country to move to, unless you're a citizen. It's also very, very expensive.
Is it to live there? I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this wasn't meant to be a relocation segment. I just wanted to say, just wanted to check in. Speaking of places, though, where in the world are you at the moment?
I'm in Seattle, Washington at the Sub Pop Warehouse in a little office / storage room.
Nice. I appreciate you making time for me in that space. How are things going at Sub Pop? How are things going in Seattle for you, would you say?
Seem to be doing all right. I mean, the trouble with what's happening at Sub Pop is just we're still dealing with production issues. And so a lot of our catalog, especially like the items that people generally want, are not in stock.
And that's a new phenomenon, right? Like for the history.
That is,
yeah.
That is apparently I'm not sure why it hits the pressing plants, like the vinyl pressing plants, harder than it does like CD production, but.
I think probably.
I guess it's because you have to pump all that oil out of the ground.
Yeah, it's probably a materials thing, among other things. It's a resources thing. You know, there's a phenomenon, Mark, where people are buying pressing plants for themselves. Metallica just did this. They were in the news for doing this.
Yeah, I don't know the full ramifications of that. I mean, does that mean that they only get to press Metallica records there?
Or maybe select customers? Like, I wonder, you know, that in Nashville and Detroit, that Third Man Records record label, they seem to have their own pressing plants. I guess I don't mean to talk shop either, but I wonder, like...
No, but they do, but we get our Singles Club singles pressed there.
Oh, you do? You use their stuff?
Third Man. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I guess where I'm going is it going to get to the point where a label like Sub Pop might be like, maybe the only solution to this issue is maybe we have to get into the record pressing plant business. Has that even entered the conversation?
I think the issue really would be like major labels not hogging all the lanes,
sure,
for their big releases at the independent pressing plants and just like reopen their own plants like they did in the olden days.
Yeah. Yeah. You said you're 61, so I don't think it's an insult to say you've been around a long time. what do you make of this, sorry, somebody tweeted this the other day, and I don't know if it's real or not, but they tweeted a shot of Adele's latest album on vinyl, just like 150 copies of it dropped off at a Goodwill, sealed, brand new, and the subtext was, here's an artist whose fan base doesn't care that she's on vinyl. Why is this happening? Again, you know, who knows if it was real or not, but there is this sentiment. You mentioned major labels clogging things, but... Are they romanticizing the demand for vinyl, maybe, like for some of their artists? Do you think that's happening?
Maybe. I mean, I think people in general sort of romanticize vinyl. You know, in the olden days, let me tell you, kids, in the olden days, LPs were just basically one of the available music delivery systems.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to hear a record, you could pretty much buy it on reel to reel 8-tracker LP.
Yeah.
And on vinyl, whatever the jargon is, the kids say.
Yeah.
And eventually like CDs and cassette tapes kind of came into the mix, and you weren't really super particular about the condition of the record that you bought.
Right.
You know, it was like, you just, oh, this is, I want to hear this record. This is the only way I can hear this record on my own time, besides like turning on the radio and hoping they play a song from it. So, you know, I mean, like, I have a lot of records with like dinged covers, and it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
But nowadays, consumers, I think they're, a lot of them are buying records as sort of like a totem or a souvenir of the band that they listen to on some streaming platform, and they want it to be pristine, and they may not even open it up.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens. I do. I'm conflicted about this.
And you would be surprised how many like customer service complaints we get by just a tiny little bit of ding in the corner of the record cover.
After you've shipped it, like, after you've shipped a record?
Yeah, after you've shipped it to them. And yeah. And it's like, oh, come on.
Okay, yeah. You say, this is why I asked. I would think you have some insight in this, because I'm conflicted.
And we've gotten complaints because we... used to tape down the cassettes to a backing board so they wouldn't like move around in shipping.
Yeah.
And people would write in and go like, well, I'm not gonna, you just ruined the shrink wrap to this cassette.
The shrink wrap.
Yeah. They clearly didn't even plan on opening the fucking thing.
Okay. What does that mean? Okay. I
don't know. It's like, you know, like, remember when people started like buying toys and keeping them in the boxes and putting them around their houses?
Yes.
For display?
Yes.
Like, I've got this pristine fucking Major Matt Mason or something. I don't know. It's just like, what the?
I've seen Toy Story 3. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
No, but my point is, though, where I wonder if there's a premium being placed on tangible goods. Because I think where we're getting at with the fetishization of a physical object is there must be some people who recognize that all this streaming stuff is vaguely ahistorical. It's not really going to potentially... We're seeing it now, Mark, like when I see it all the time. Netflix will just say, we're taking away these shows. We're taking away these movies. Right. And people like right. me, like they've taken away like Arrested Development in its, and this might be gone by now, to be honest. They not only bought the rights to that TV show, they helped produce a new season or two of that show.
Right,
and
right.
they said, carte blanche, we're taking the whole thing down. So unless you, and I mean, what I'm saying is at one or two seasons of it wasn't even ever available physically. It was only on Netflix. What I'm saying is I go through this all the time because I've recently decided to put a slight moratorium on buying a bunch of new records because they were piling up. And I also have two kids. Things were getting busy. I listen, but I also don't have as much time. So I'm like, I'm just going to wait till I get through the ones I haven't listened to. And then the odd thing I'll buy, like the new Mudhoney, I'm going to buy. I'm just going to put that out there right now. That I'm buying. But other things, I'm just trying to keep calm. But I do think it's good on some level that people are, whatever the, I think the other thing is vinyls, maybe CDs and cassettes are still viable formats, but vinyl is like the only real physical format that, no, that can't be true. Am I misspeaking? You sell CDs, don't you? At Sub Pop
yeah.
A lot, like a lot of CDs?
No.
More vinyl than CDs?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
More vinyl than CDs.
So that backs up my argument then. It's right now, I think vinyl is the only real physical thing, and I think some people like it. It feels real. Do you agree?
It feels real. It feels realer than, more real than a CD. I mean, you know, if you, especially if you're just fetishizing something, you want the biggest artwork there is.
Right. But if you're listening to it,
but if you're also, I mean, I don't know, vinyl has its particularities and so do CDs. I don't know, like if there's one is superior to the other.
Sure. What I'm getting at though is in the market right now, besides cassette tapes and CDs, which I don't think sell huge numbers, like you're kind of backing me up. Vinyl, all I'm getting at is there's, I think, a healthy mentality to wanting the physical object. The unhealthy part is what you're saying. People buying them and not listening to them, putting them on a, framing them, complaining that the shrink wrap is damaged. Like that seems unhealthy. That's like a different kind of landlording over this is going to be worth something someday. So I'm buying this property, but I can't, for those of us who actually listen to vinyl, it's hard to complain that vinyl is like the main format. Do you know where I'm coming from? Like, do you?
No. No, it's just the problem is I think like in terms of getting more made, it's a production issue. That's a whole different.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, let's get into this. Sorry,
I mean, the one thing that I did that's sort of along those lines is when it was announced that Appetite for Destruction was going to have a new cover. I went out and bought a copy of the original cover, thinking like in sometime in the future that would be worth money.
When did you do that?
When it came out.
Oh, in like 1987.
88?
88, like right. Okay.
Whatever they announced, like they were like that Robert Williams cover was controversial.
The one with the lady. Who
the robot and the lady.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah. No, you're not a fan of that record, I'm gathering? I can't tell.
I never felt the need to own it except maybe sell it.
So do you still have that copy?
Yeah.
And have you priced it out lately?
I haven't. Can't be bothered.
Okay. Just making.
I'm not desperate yet. I mean, I remember looking at it when eBay kind of first became a thing for used records, and it really wasn't worth that much. Because there's probably still like millions of them made.
Right.
Or hundreds of thousands.
So the new thing, do you ever spend time on the Discogs website?
I don't really buy and sell records all that much.
Yeah.
I mean, I do check things out on there, but
that seems to be the new hub for all of this stuff.
Yeah. Yes. My wife and I are kind of getting closer to like the Swedish death cleaning part of our lives.
So there might be a Mark Arm purge happening at some point.
Not fully. I mean, I have to get my shit together in order to get things going up on Discogs. I've never done that. But like, you know, my wife is definitely going through like the DVDs we accumulated. It's like, we're never going to watch this again. I'm like, do not get rid of Spinal Tap.
I just had this conversation with someone.
Because it may not be streaming when you want to stream.
But this is what I just had a conversation with a comedian on my show. His name's Nathan McIntosh, and he has some bits about this. Like, we started talking about how he, as soon as one of the Terminator movies, the recent sequels, tanked, he made a point of buying everything on Blu-ray. Because he's like, that tanking might impact the whole franchise. And sure, and then we were talking about streaming, and like the example I'm citing, like we have family movie night now at my house. I have an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old, and we each rotate with my wife and I. I bought a popcorn machine. I asked for one for Christmas, the old-timey one with the kettle, and it.
Oh,
it's
right.
So,
oh,
it's
nice.
Really fun. We have a good time, and but we each rotate through movies. And I'm going through my Blu-rays. I'm making it sort of vaguely, I'm being a dad, and I'm like, they want to watch, you know, Marvel movies. And, well, my daughter picked Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and that was a huge hit. That's a good movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She didn't know. She saw the trailer, and there was animation and physical, real people, and she's like, what is this? Like, so, anyway, we watched that. It was great. But I picked, like, one of my movies was Rear Window by Alfred Hitchcock. And I thought, oh, they're not going to like this. It's slow. They loved it. They loved it. And I had it on I had an Alfred Hitchcock Blu-ray box set, and I grabbed it. It was fun. I hadn't done it in years. I took it out and I put it in, and the Blu-ray player lit up, and it was great. And I think that's good, because I don't even know if those movies are on any streaming service in Canada unless I pay for them. You know what I mean? So I'm just, I don't know why I'm going on this rant. I think there's something nice about physicality, but it's completely space consuming. And, anyway, I don't know where I'm going with this, except
it's space consuming, and eventually it's landfill filling.
Yeah, I guess we're going to die. Is that what we're getting at? Someone's going to have to deal with all this stuff. Yeah, we might as well deal with it. And it's, yeah, I get that stuff too. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens with all this stuff. Anyway, speaking of plastic and eternity, this seems like a nice segue.
Right.
Nice segue.
I see what you did there.
I'm a semi-professional, Mark. It is very nice to speak with you again. I must say, I always appreciate this. I think your third time on this particular show, and I don't know how many times we've spoken before that. I just want to say, I'm just so happy you're around and making music like this. Let me start with that.
That's greatly appreciated. Thank you, Vish.
And congratulations on this brilliant new record. From what I can gather, because of everyone's gone through this process lately of having to adapt and change the way they do things because of the pandemic and other reasons, I gather this is the case for Mudhoney, but I'd like you to articulate it. What was the process like of making this record, and how did it differ from every other time you've tried to make a record together?
Well, the process in a way was kind of rushed because we had a deadline. Guys and his family were planning to move to Australia, and they've since moved to Australia. He's Australian, for those who don't know. He's like born in Perth. So it's easy for him to move there.
Also, a doctor, a surgeon? What is he again?
He is a nurse.
Oh, sorry, a nurse. Sorry. Yeah, I knew that kept him busy as well from the last time you were on the show. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
And his wife got a job with an NGO based in Australia, and they were initially planning on moving in October of 2021, but Australia was still locked down at that point. It was like virtually impossible to get in. And the few flights that went to Australia were like insanely expensive. And then you would have to like pay for getting sequestered in a hotel for 2 weeks before they allowed you to walk freely amongst the people.
Yeah.
And we didn't get together to start working on new material until we're all at both doses of the initial vaccine. So that was in June of 2021. So we were looking at just like a couple of months to try to get as much stuff down. And what we were kind of thinking might happen is we'll just like write as many riffs as we can, go into the studio with Johnny, probably dump them into iTunes, and then like maybe later try to arrange them in Pro Tools or something like that. If like, depending on like how many words there were or whatever, you know, just like we didn't even know like how we were going to actually approach this. So we were kind of frantically frantically yet almost effortlessly working on new music ideas. And we had like studio time booked in September. Guy and his family decided to, like, since they couldn't get to Australia in October, that just to put the whole thing off until after his daughter completed her school year in June. So that gave us a fair amount of breathing room. We moved our initial recording back to November, booked 9 days, and kind of went into the studio with maybe 4 or 5 songs that were completed. Hmm. Whereas usually we, like, every song, when we go into the studio, we like go in for a short amount of time, like a long weekend, and the songs are well rehearsed and there's no like what happens next with this song.
Yeah.
And this time around, we just sort of, like, a lot of stuff was kind of finished in the studio. Like, other, we came up with additional parts to the songs, and I didn't have lyrics for everything. So a lot of the songs we arranged as if there might someday be lyrics, but also with, like, the idea, like, well, maybe this will be an instrumental, you know, what's going to work.
Yeah.
So, like, in 9 days, we recorded 20 songs, like the basics pretty much. And we did, like, overdubs and vocals later.
So quite fragmented by the sounds of it. Anything like this happened in the past with this band?
No.
Never. Okay.
No, it was, I mean, I talking about the recording process is, and the writing process, I feel like, is kind of boring and only really maybe exciting for people who are in those worlds and do that stuff.
Sure.
So I don't know if you want to dwell on that.
I don't necessarily want to dwell on it except for these circumstances. Surely if the narrative was, we just did what we always do, what we've been doing all this time, I would have been like, okay, no point in dwelling on it.
Yeah.
The other thing that I find about this fragmented process and the time we've all collectively been going through over the last 3 odd years is that I've talked to a few artists who might have had a germ of an idea, no pun intended. They might have had a germ of an idea. And then because of various delays, they had more time to think about a song and potentially rework a song. So if it wasn't for all this calamity, that song would have come out almost immediately as it was. But as the world changed, lyrics changed, ideas changed, maybe even the attack or the intensity of a song might change as the stress level went up or the anger rose or what have you, whatever your emotional state. Do you feel like if you ponder this, and again, I don't want to be boring, but it is in my nature to be a little bit boring. Let's face it, everyone. My point is, can you track evolution of ideas within this album, like where you started a song going one way lyrically and then, oh, shit. Like, I'm going to have to change. This doesn't feel even contemporary anymore. Because this is a very, to me anyway, this feels like a very contemporary record. It's about this time. That's my reading of it. Would you agree with that, first of all?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I even really started working on lyrics till we were, like, all working on the songs all together.
I see.
You know?
Okay.
I didn't have a bunch of, like, lyrics stockpiled. The only exception to that was maybe during the lockdown, I kind of revisited the riff for almost everything, which is something that dates back to like Vanishing Point era, like, okay, maybe 10, 12 years ago.
I see.
And always thought was, like, super cool, but didn't know how to approach it with a vocal melody. And, you know, I wanted to come up with, like, a guitar part that didn't just mimic what was already there, what Steve and Guy were doing.
Yeah.
So that might have been done in my basement, or that process started in my basement before we actually got together. But
yeah,
lyrics for me, they kind of tend to come later. Like, I don't carry a journal and, like, just start, you know, and write down all my brilliant thoughts as they come to me.
Okay, that's fair. So roughly what time frame did you start, like, literally the month, the year, when did you start digging into, I got to write some lyrics for these songs?
Oh, when we started working on the songs, which would have been, I guess, in 2021, in the summer of 2021.
Okay, that's when you started. I thought you maybe were trying to get at that most of the arrangements were captured, bed tracks were captured, and then you went in with vocals. But you're saying it was some amalgam of everything, like you were in
the Yeah.
Okay, so 2021. Yeah,
before we went, well, like, we recorded, I think I mentioned this, we recorded 20 songs.
Yeah.
And before we went to the studio, we had full arrangements for like maybe four or five.
Okay.
So everything else was sort of cobbled together and arranged in the studio.
One of the reasons I'm asking about this is because I think in the last 3 years, every few months, zeitgeist mood, collective mood has shifted. I think we were initially, when this all started, I think most of us were like shocked, worried, then anger. Then anger for different reasons, stress for different reasons. On a personal level, if you think of that time and place that you started to dig in and write words down, what frame of mind would you characterize your frame of mind as you began to ponder what to talk about?
Ah, fuck, I don't know. What was my frame of mind? Normal Mark Arm, I guess.
that is actually, if you go to a mood board, that's on there. Normal Mark Arm.
It wasn't like, I mean, a lot of these songs are born out of frustration, and that's not something that ever totally goes away for me.
Yeah.
Frustration and bemusement.
To me, you're the ideal voice. Like, I think some people, Mark, as you may guess, I talk to lots of different people. Some people have tried to deal with this situation and talk about it in their work and process it. Other people are like, no, I couldn't even deal with this. I decided to write about myself or some other thing. I revisited a story or a batch of songs from 2016. I'm not ready to talk about this. Again, I can't think of anyone better, Mark. We need Mark Arm to kind of process some of what's going on and put it into songs, because that's where I'm coming from with it. You can't be objective about it. But when I said earlier, this is a contemporary blast of songs, we're talking about 2021, I guess, in terms of lyrics. Were you purposeful in that regard? Like, I'm going to try to talk about things mostly anyway. I'm generalizing. There are other themes on this record, but did you make a point of like, I got to fucking talk about this shit. Like, this is crazy. We have to talk about this.
It was crazy, but I didn't want to like write a record that was completely dated.
Yeah.
You know, and like super time specific. I think the one song that definitely might fall into that trap is Here Comes a Flood, because it's just about like ivermectin use.
But that's an interesting one, if I may, because if people dig into that song, I think there's obviously stuff about right-wing media.
That was what was pushing.
But swirling
that is a cure.
Swirling within that ideology, though, there's also Noah's Ark, I would argue. There's maybe a little Animal Farm. There's just like, I picked up on a few different things, but it's all swirling around kind of a similar ideology of like, we're right, whatever we say, and it also, we're going to be fine. We're going somewhere else. You guys are all fucked because we believe in this kind of thing and you're sheep and blah, blah, blah. Sorry. Is that a wrong interpretation from your perspective?
No, that's perfect.
Yeah. So
nice one.
Thank you. I get an A. I got an A on my essay, everyone. My thesis defense went well. No, that's a contemporary one, but I feel like I can't help but wonder if all of this shit has pervaded you as a writer and maybe even the way you attack these songs. There's also like, beautiful. There's acoustic guitars. There's like a lovely, like almost like balladeering on some small level. Don't get it twisted, but a little bit. So I think it captures a pretty dynamic mood and a dynamic range of shit that we've all been going through in a weird way, but from a very personal place. So that's why I'm kind of trying to ask you some potentially awkward questions about where you were kind of coming from.
Well, they're not awkward.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just making them awkward.
That's in the Mark Arm mood board too, everyone. Mark Arm awkward.
makes life awkward.
Here's a way of framing it for you, Mark. Do you think, man, you're going to hate this one. Do you think you write songs to process the world?
I don't think I write songs to process the world as much as they're a reflection of how I'm processing the world.
Right. So it's not a deliberate action for you to be like, I got to make sense of this. I better write a song.
Oh, and all those poor people out there who aren't songwriters, who just really can't make sense of the world. I really pity them.
Do you finish a batch of songs like this and feel like you have a better sense of how you feel about shit? Like, what's going on?
No, usually I look back, I'm going to go, what the fuck was that?
So your relationship to songwriting has always been a little detached. Does this feel more... Sorry, I'm putting words in your mouth. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like, to me, the most boring subject matter for a song is like a relationship. You know, like, oh, you had a breakup. You're so alone in that. You know, like, fuck off.
It's a cliche.
Why? Who cares? Yeah. Who cares about you and your fucking relationship?
And yet, don't you have a love song for Tom Herman here?
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, I've never actually met Tom Herman.
It's not a personal love song. It's not a, it's not a love song in the tradition that you're talking about, the cliche, but no. There's a devotional song to a guitar player.
No, but it's not a heartbreak song.
No, I see what you're saying.
You know. Yeah. I had a thought and I, what was it? Oh, it doesn't matter.
No, I here's the thing, everyone listening. If anyone's going to be gun shy about talking about their work, I think it's going to be you, Mark, because I think you probably view it as a little pretentious. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Possibly. I mean, I'm not like a brooding artist or anything, and I don't obsess over this stuff that I do.
You write with a certain, when I say detachment, by the way, you used the word bemusement earlier, and I can't help but be like, you're like an observational comedian. you're into it. You're part of society, but you're kind of looking at it from a slightly objective point of view, maybe. And maybe that's how you.
I mean, I try to. Obviously, it's not going to be purely objective. Nothing. I don't think any person can be purely objective.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I think of some of these songs, like Souvenir of My Trip, you invoked, what did you invoke earlier? Almost Everything. Even that, like the narrative voice, I can't help but feel like it's an alien or something. Like someone who's, like, I know it's someone, I don't want to give away too much, but that's what I'm talking about too. Like you seem to adopt narrative. The narrative voices that you employ, they're not always yours. Is that a fair way of putting it?
For sure.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I try not to, like, even if it's a subject that I try to find a way to, like, maybe a short story writer, you know,
or yes.
Like coming up with like almost a character that, you know, I don't go into great detail, like describing their clothes or anything like that.
Yeah.
But and some of these songs are like Souvenir of My Trip, Almost Everything. Severed Dreams in the Sleeper Cell of One or Two are, I would say, influenced by psychedelic sci-fi.
Yes. Yes, there is that coming up too. Sorry, I know we've talked about this before. I believe we have anyway, when I got into your origin story. Where does your interest in kind of psychedelic sci-fi kind of emanate from? Because that's been a running theme in Mudhoney as well. Can you, just for people who may be not familiar, where does that interest sort of come from for you?
Well, I mean, I haven't had a true psychedelic experience in decades,
mm-hmm.
but my younger years of tripping were initially pretty profound. And so that's always something that I can just sort of fall back into, I think. And I think I'm actually maybe due for a heroic dose at some point, but I'd like to do it in a decent and, you know, like a safe environment with maybe a guide, not like an ayahuasca like shaman or anything like that, where like I'm in a room with a bunch of people who are vomiting around me.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great, by the way. That sounds pleasant.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but that sounds fantastic.
Sounds fucking terrifying. But not just like running around in the city, you know, like you would maybe when you're in your early 20s or teens or stupidly like messing around with psychedelics as entertainment.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about psychedelics because I think we're in a, and I think you get into this on this record a little bit, even by talking about that horse tranquilizer, whatever the hell it was, the drug. We're in a weird time for information, distortion, mind-altering information, let alone substances. Do you feel that a little bit? Like we're so fractured that information is, we don't trust anything kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, I virtually spend no time with social media. Like every once in a while, I'll like, if I hear something like about someone I know passing away, which happened recently, I'll get on my wife's Facebook and try to find out if like they're, like a friend of mine texted me about someone who had died. And I was like, is this true? You know, so I tried to confirm that.
Mm. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to hear that, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just like, you know, what's this person up to? Mm-hmm. Well, and usually the people who want to like find out what's going on in their lives, they don't post anything. Like, hey, well, I haven't thought of Joe for a long time. What's Joe up to? Oh, he hasn't posted since 2019.
Yeah, I think there's more than a few of us who are like, we have those things. I'm one of them. Like, I only now use them to let people know about stuff on my show. I just gave up. I don't know what else to do with it. And if I didn't have to do that, I was getting kind of tired of people being like, coming up to me on the street who I hadn't talked to in a while, being like, sorry to hear about your cat. I'm like, how do you know about my cat? Oh, because somebody posted it and my wife or I posted it on the face. That's weird. Like people were finishing sentences, conversations before they even started. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, you were in Toronto. Anyway, got to go. Like they just, it was like, what happened to asking how things were going? Yeah, I sound old, but the surveillance state part of it was kind of creeping me out personally. But my point being, though, because for those of us who haven't
But, you know, that's the problem with the vaccine, because there's a chip that'll follow you around.
Unlike the cell phones we have.
Unlike your fucking phone. that you willingly take with you wherever you go.
I tried to have a joke that bombed at the beginning about America. But, Mark, in all seriousness, like, you know, we also talked about you maybe pondering moving. Are you sad? Are you upset? Are you angry? Like, what do you make of how, not just your country, everywhere? You actually, yeah, to be fair, this is happening everywhere. In a grand statement, if you can make one, overarching statement, I should say, what's going on with us from your perspective, and how is our behavior maybe manifesting itself in some of these songs? Can you speak to that?
Yesterday at lunch, my coworker pulled up that documentary about Waco, mm-hmm. the David Koresh thing. And I was just like, it's so weird. Like, who are these people that come up with like a half-baked idea and think it's like, this is how the world should be, and then convince other people to follow them? And, you know, I said that to Gabe, my coworker, and he was like, well, you know, like, most people aren't that smart.
Mm-hmm. Most people are also looking for something to put their faith in.
Yeah. Why? I don't think I've ever looked for that.
No.
I mean, I was raised in like a Christian fucking.
Yeah.
You know, and all that did was like make me go like see hypocrisy everywhere.
You yes.
know? Like I just, I mean, from like childhood. You know, same. It was like clear as day to me. And like, there's other people who are like fully buy it, or whatever is being fucking yeah. sold to them, they fully buy it. And it's just like so weird to me.
Yeah. I had the same experience with Hinduism. And all it took was them saying, my parents, who I love, and all that. But they'd say, we have to do this. And this is why. You know, again, that religion is a lot of figures. It's not just the one guy or the one. There's like an elephant god and like the multiple arms. And I'd be like, okay, this seems impossible for me to process as a human being. If there's nothing logical about this, this seems fantastical. How can you believe this? And the more questions I would ask about why we're doing things, the more I turned into a punk.
Right.
At a young age, like, oh, okay, you got nothing. You can't back any of this up. It's feelings. And now I think
it's also tradition.
It's tradition and feelings.
This is what our family has believed for generations, and so we just go with it.
But that's now happening in, like you said, we're seeing it all. How many documentaries are there about cults of people making fringe things up? I won't even name them all. Just naming, like, they just, like, we're going to create a cult. And it's all sort of based on there's one true thing to believe. And now you're seeing it with your that guy down there. He's got a cult. And they just believe everything he and Q and whoever. I didn't want to name any of them. I think people are depressed. And they don't believe. I think religion has let a lot of people down.
Really?
I think religion set a lot of people up to think everything was going to be one way. And when it didn't, they went for something else. And now it's just anything. Is that a way of putting it? It's the ivermectin.
Getting into like social media rabbit holes and stuff, the whole idea of do your own research and your own research is only just based on like finding tweets or posts that reinforce your belief.
But I think a lot of the, I'm going to really generalize here. I think there are people who are gaming the system to, sorry, Mark, I have a theory here in Canada that conservative people want to keep their voting bloc as dumb as possible.
That's definitely key in the U.S. as well.
They prey on their lack of knowledge and education, so they're more susceptible. That's the voting. That's why they attack the schools. In particular, and the media, because those are places where people tend to get real information. So,
books.
Everything with real information they're going after is to keep people numb and dumb. That's what I think. Now, do I sound like a tinfoil wearing conspiracy theorist? I don't mean to be like that guy.
No, I don't. I mean, well, you know how there's like people get upset about like drag queens like reading books to school children in libraries?
Yeah.
You've heard of that?
100%. It's every day I hear about it. Yeah.
I think the real issue is it's not that there's drag queens doing the reading. It's just that there's books.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So
they're just trying to shut down reading to kids.
Right. And so where I was coming from, though, is.
But yeah, I understand like you're floating that thought as a conspiracy theory.
I don't think it's a conspiracy theory. I think I think that's true because. Where I'm also at, and I've talked about this with a few people, is that satire doesn't even work anymore because there's some people on the internet that go and they talk to, and they show how dumb some of these people are. They just out-talk them and they outthink them in front of a camera. And 10 years ago, we'd all have a good laugh at it, but now it seems sad and dangerous to me because I think...
Sort of like, you mean like Jordan Klepper going around on The Daily Show and going to Trump rallies and like...
Yeah, or the good liars who I like, but I also think, what are we at the end of everything I watch? I'm like, well, what are we doing with this? You've just told your audience how we all know this. You're trying to show how dumb they are. What I see is, I see it now as very sad. I see these people as the ones who want to assert their intelligence because they've been treated like idiots, or they are maybe idiots, but they've been treated so badly. That they can't, this is the way they assert their intelligence by, oh, you don't know the real facts. And you're like, yeah, those aren't real facts. I'm sick of listening to you intellectuals tell me what's real and what's not. You've been snobby and shitty to me my whole life. Fuck you. Here's what I think. I don't see how we're out of this. Like, I don't see any way out because the people who are the least educated are pretending to be the most educated. Is this making sense? I don't know how.
Yeah, it is making sense. I'm just trying to wondering where this like anti-smart people victimhood is coming from, because like most people probably don't just like, I don't think they even engage with like people who are telling them that they're dumb. They're probably just engaging with like people from their own community who.
It's something with mainstream, like Fauci, Dr. Fauci. He's a doctor. That's an actual doctor.
People just didn't want to hear anything that told them that they had to like not have parties or whatever the fuck, or, you know, not keep their business open. You know, I mean, which it was a fucking terrible thing. You know, you can't generate money.
Yeah.
You know, and your family's going to starve. you know.
Well, most of the stupidity, if you will, I think is actually rooted in fear. Most hatred is rooted in insecurity and fear. Fauci is telling you, like, this is fucked up. And they're like, no, it doesn't have to be fucked up. Denial, just denial of, it's not only denial, it's just denial of facts, but just denial generally. And I feel like some of this is swimming around in these songs, which I want to get back to. Sorry for going on several rants. I think it's germane to some extent, but like, yeah, like, how do we coexist when people just mistrust everything that is frightening? Climate change. Like, sorry, the COVID stuff to me was it's still a microcosm of what everyone has been saying about climate change for like 60 years. Of compartmentalizing that is that's not happening. That's not happening. And not only is it not happening, you're lying to us. Like, it's shifted.
Well, I mean, even with the pandemic, the previous one was maybe out of the memory of most people, like the one in, like, the Spanish flu.
1918 or whatever it was. Yeah.
Or 20.
1918, 20? I don't remember.
It was during World War One, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, my parents were born in the early 20s, so they didn't have any memory of that. But there is knowledge of it. It wasn't really that far away.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I think for the last at least 20 or 30 years, you'd hear about, like, oh, they think this bird flu might be the next pandemic. You know, that was just, like, a constant thing. So when it actually happens, people were surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's been movies made about this idea.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you talk about psychedelic science fiction. It seems like science fiction to people. It doesn't seem. Yeah. I don't think people accept reality for reality, is where I'm coming from. And I think maybe where you're coming from with some of these songs.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, Crimean Atmospheric River for sure. That's,
yeah.
The dispassionate weather talking about the stupid humans.
Yeah. Like I said, I think these are messages that I for one appreciate them, because there are a lot of people who are not engaging with this kind of real life information. And I appreciate that too. Sometimes I want a respite from the world, so I put on a record. I just want you to know that I appreciate you digging in. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. And I don't think it's going to be dated. Sorry, on some level, though, every record you have made, Mark, is probably a little archive of that time and place in your life, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as we look back, as you look back, if you ever do, you more than us will have a better sense of, like, oh, that's what was going on. I can remember what was kind of going on when I kind of wrote that song. Do you have those thoughts or impulses?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And sometimes, especially with some of the older songs, I'll just be like, oh my God, these lyrics are so terrible. I was so young and dumb.
Do you adapt those songs now? Alter them? Or?
Yeah, I don't. No. I'm not going to change the lyrics to Here Comes Sickness.
No. Probably not necessary, actually, at this point. No, no, that's fair enough. You talked about Guy moving to Australia, and that obviously creates a huge geographic disconnect. How's the band sort of functioning at the moment, if it is, as you gear up for this record release?
Well, since he moved, we've done a European tour. So what we do is we got together about 4 or 5 days before the tour and practiced in Nijmegen, where our tour manager lives. He hooked us up with this nice practice place, which was just right around the corner from a hotel that we stayed at. And that was kind of how we got ready. And we're going to do a similar thing in Australia, going to Melbourne about 5 days before the tour starts.
Nice. That's great. So you're making it. Yeah. You're going to make it work.
No. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
There's something in the biographical information about people asking you about how long this band's been together, and you're like, "This is what friends do." I thought that was really lovely. I think you compared it to, like, some people get together to play poker. That's a very centered philosophy. Like, these are your buddies. What else are you going to do? Is that your philosophy?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not all my buddies, but they're the buddies that I play music with. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I don't have poker nights, but I go, you know, get in a vehicle and drive to the coast and hope there's surf with friends.
Yeah, right. I think you're going to have fun in Australia. From what I understand, the surfing is outstanding. You ever surfed in Australia?
Yes. Yeah, on the last Monkey Wrench tour, I went to Bell's Beach, and that was, up until that point, like the wave of my life. That was fucking great.
You ever get scared out on the
At times, yeah.
I couldn't do it. You can tell I'm a coward. I couldn't do it. I can't swim. I'm not buoyant, Mark. I sink. I sink like a stone.
Swimming helps.
Yes.
Having confidence in the water. I mean, I think before you even surf, you got to just play in the waves on shore and understand like kind of how they work as a, you know.
Yeah. Sharks? Do you ever worry about the sharks?
No, there's this place in California that my wife and I went to several times that we loved going to, and it was sort of a more secluded place. And several years ago now, I mean, some stand-up paddleboarder was like, had a GoPro on the top of his paddle and would stick that edge down, and you would just see like juvenile great whites.
Oh my God.
Swimming around.
Whoa.
And like they're always there.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
So after realizing that, I wasn't like scared about going to that place. I was more like, oh, they don't give a shit about you. And I think because it's like a juvenile breeding ground, right? I think I don't know for sure. I'm no shark. I don't know how sharks think. But I kind of feel like a juvenile is... We aren't their food, right?
No.
We're not, and we get kind of caught. Usually it's by like an older shark who maybe doesn't see or smell as good.
Are you saying that like, most shark attacks occur because of senile sharks? Is that what you're...
I think that might be it, at least in terms of great whites.
Huh.
I think a bull shark and a tiger shark, that's a different story, but I've never surfed in waters with those.
I didn't mean to invoke anything scary, but I was talking about movie night, and I made the huge mistake of thinking my 8 and 11-year-old were ready for Jaws.
Oh, no.
Not a good idea. I saw it when I was like 5 or 6. I gave him a big talk. I'm like, look, there's a shark. It's real, but it's not. I couldn't figure out how to talk about it, because most of the fantastical movies, you're going to be like, there's no witches. There's no bears that talk and then eat you. But the shark is real. So then I found myself saying something, and we shut it off in like 10 minutes. They're like, no, this is too scary. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm a bad dad. Sharks are frightening.
That movie is also like done so much to damage to sharks.
Yes, it has.
You know.
Yes.
And it did a little bit of psychological damage to me as a kid. Like, I mean, I remember going to like the community pool and thinking that like, well, I hope a shark doesn't come up through that drain.
Mark, I can't swim. I'm telling you, I can't swim. And I saw Jaws when I was like 5 years old. I refused to learn how to. I'm like, the less I know, the less likely. If someone says, go, why don't you go in the ocean? I'm like, no, I can't swim. And which was last time we were in Nova Scotia. We went to the beach, and I just randomly wrote like a shark and the beach's name. A week earlier, there was a great white swimming around exactly where we were. And I was like, what? And they say they've been tracking this great white that comes up from Florida to Nova Scotia. And they named it like Bessie or something. There's some cute name. And I didn't like it. I missed it, but I didn't like it. Anyway, sorry to get into the sharks. Your surfing fascinates me. I'm glad you enjoy it. One real quick thing before we wrap up, and I don't know if you can even speak to it, but I understand your longtime bandmate Steve has a book coming out. Do you have any insights about this that you can share? I think it's sort of about your stuff.
I have not read it yet.
Okay.
But it's called Mud Ride, which so I'm assuming that Mud Honey might play a part of it.
Yeah. Okay, but you haven't. He didn't ask you. Did you interview for it or anything?
No. He said when he was working on it initially, he would like reach out to Dan, who has like the kind of the sharpest memory for detail of any of us. you know, like, hey, you know, when we did this, do you remember this? And then after a while, he was kind of like, fuck it. It's just my memory.
Yeah, he's okay.
It doesn't matter how true it is. If there's like an objective truth, which you can't find.
So it's a very personal story for him, as far as you know.
As far as I know.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I just thought maybe you... Sorry to bother you with that. I figured that might be
the
case.
No, not a problem. I'm looking forward to reading it, and I'm stoked for Steve that he has this thing coming out where he gets, I guess, all of his ill feelings towards me off of his chest.
You should try writing a song, articulating it in a song. That would be a good, like, in the lyrics.
Here, I wrote this song, and these are the lyrics you have to sing.
About you. About yourself.
Ah, geez, Steve, I don't know if I can do this. This is terrible.
Do you have any other before we get to the Mudhoney sort of business plugging, do you have your own outside projects or interests that you're pondering? Books or... There's already been at least one documentary, right? I'm trying to think. Is there anything you got coming up?
No, there's been a documentary that was done around the time of the Lucky Ones. And yeah. Keith Cameron wrote a book on the band that was updated as we were recording this latest record. So that
the
new edition has some newer stuff in it.
What about you? Have you thought about not venturing outside of songwriting? In terms of telling,
I'm barely venturing in songwriting.
Fair enough. Touche. I should have known that might be the answer. Okay, fair enough. No, I appreciate that. So, a couple of housekeeping questions. Wondering about what's next. I know that I 20 songs, to my knowledge, we got 13. No, wait, what do we got on the record? I think we got 13 on the record. Is that right?
Yep.
And then you've got, Little Dogs. I meant to ask you about Little Dogs, but you just like little dogs. Is that the answer?
I like little dogs. Yes.
You got yourself a little dog?
I do have a little dog.
Why the little dogs? My kids want an animal and we're wrestling with what to get. Not literally wrestling with animals. We're we're like cat, dog. What are we going to get?
We've had dogs. Like, we got our first dog about a year into our marriage. Huh. And I had a dogs when I was a kid. So I've always loved those little critters. But I never thought of myself as someone who would get attached to a toy sized dog. Like that was for like people who like to carry them around in bags as an accessory right?
Yeah. That was a phenomenon earlier this century in the late 90s as well among Hollywood starlets, I believe.
Yeah. And my wife volunteers at the Seattle Animal Shelter, and about 7 years ago now, there was an email that went out that, like, we desperately need some fosters. We just pulled 44 animals out of an apartment in the U District.
Oh, no.
And Emily went in and asked them just to hand her the dog that needed to get out of the situation the most, and handed her this tiny little Pomeranian who had pneumonia and all kinds of issues. And I noticed there was another like white little Pomeranian in a cat cage, and a month later went back and got that one. So we had these two little dogs, and the court case, like, you couldn't post anything about them on social media. You couldn't do anything to alter them, like take them to a groomer or get them neutered, because you know, if the court case was lost, the dogs would have to go back to the people who had them and the animals were taken from. The court case, I mean, it was an obvious thing, but like two of the three people who were involved like skipped town, and so like it took them a long time to just kind of come to some sort of realization that they weren't ever going to like really nail these people to the wall. So after 14 months of having these funny little weird dogs, we felt like we couldn't give them up. And my excuse was like, one of them, the second one, Russell, has such a strange, high pitched, and probably to most people, annoying voice. That, like, the kind of person who would just want an accessory dog would probably you know, like either get the dog debarked or try to train his freakiness out of him,
right.
You know, whereas we were just willing to let Russell be Russell.
Nice. That's
and
great.
So we ended up adopting Russell and Terry, and Terry unfortunately eventually died less than 3 years old, because I think he had scarring on his lungs from that pneumonia. And
I'm sorry to hear that. That's horrible.
Yeah. It was really terrible. Mm. And Dan got a dog, and it was a little dog. And Guy has been, he had a Skipper Pomeranian mix that sadly passed away, but luckily before they went to Australia, because, you know, that dog was getting pretty old and it wasn't going to be able to make that journey and be in quarantine in Australia for, I don't know how long their quarantine is, but it's definitely months.
Yeah.
So, you know, three of the four of us had little dogs. And that song was like one of the songs that the music, Dan wrote that. And we arranged it as if it was going to be an instrumental, because it was such a kind of melodic, busy guitar part that I just at first couldn't wrap my head around how to sing over that.
Yeah.
So like in the period between recording the initial batch of songs and then putting vocals down, like, you know, I had everything on a CD that I was playing in my car. And when commute home from work, I guess I must have been thinking about my little dog that was going to greet me when I got home, and just started freeforming. And like, by the time I got home, I had a couple of lines, and I just like the idea was struck me as so fucking funny. I was like, I'm just going to go with this. You know, I might get mocked by the rest of my band or.
No, it's lovely. It's charming. And I love it. To be honest, when I was reading the lyrics last night and thinking about the song, are you familiar with Bruce McCullough of the Kids in the Hall has a song?
Oh, yeah. Terriers.
Terriers. Yeah. It has the same sort of sentiment of just like, it's why not? Why not like a lovely ode to dogs? What's wrong with that? No, it's great. Thank you for sharing that and explaining that. My question was actually triggered because I was looking at the track listing and realizing there were 13 songs on the album. I believe there's a double 7-inch, or a 7-inch maybe. So I don't know how many songs are on that.
There's a 7-inch. It's two songs.
Two
it's
songs.
Limited. It's like 400 or something that's being made in Australia for the tour.
Okay. So that's 15 songs. You said you recorded 20. Sorry, right. This is convoluted. My question was going to be, what's coming up next for Mudhoney? Have you started writing new songs?
We have not started writing new songs. There will probably be an EP similar to Morning in America, which was sort of like the songs that for one reason or another didn't quite make Digital Garbage. But, you know, some of those songs could have definitely made Digital Garbage. Same with some of the songs that we didn't put on Plastic Eternity, maybe like for reasons of thematic reasons or something. But like, you know, like when putting together an album, I try to come up with a flow that feels like kind of a mixtape.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you're not just like, I mean, as much as I love Hear Nothing, See Nothing, Say Nothing by Discharge, it is pretty much one note.
Yeah. So you've got,
it's a great note. It's a great note. And I'm there for the entire record.
Yeah.
But you know, want to have something that a little bit of flow that would take you through different like feelings, I guess.
Yeah.
Emotions or I don't know.
Tastes
kind of arrive.
Tastes and moods. Tones?
Yes, yes, exactly.
So you've got, where I'm coming from mathematically is there's five songs that aren't accounted for as I'm speaking to you. You're suggesting they may or not make it onto an EP or something.
No, I'm thinking those songs along with the two songs that are on the super limited 7-inch will probably be on an EP.
Oh, all of that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, the people who can't get those two and Digital Garbage, like some of those songs were on like a tour 7-inch.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of what we're going with. And Johnny did a dub remix of almost everything that's really cool. So we'll add that to it.
Nice.
you know, maybe we'll come up with some more remixes and do a double album.
Maybe, why not? You could do at least a digital version and people would probably love that. Yeah, like a digital expanded version or something or whatever. No, that's great. I appreciate that. Okay, so writing wise, nothing hopping yet, but maybe
I feel like write best when we're all in the room together.
Yes.
So that's going to be, I think, the issue going forward, like how we actually like write new songs with Guy in Australia. I mean, do we just gather together someplace and have an intensive workshop or something? I don't know. Do we sequester to a chateau in the countryside of France or perhaps
some sort of exile on Main Street situation, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, that sounds, I mean, it sounds to me that the urgency that with which you had to work with deadlines, timelines and whatnot wasn't necessarily off-putting. It worked itself out. So maybe it's a new way of doing things.
Right, right.
Like that urgency will be like, okay, we're only here for a week or two. Let's bang this out. And then, you know, maybe at the end of the week, the second week, we can record. If we're not ready, we're not ready. We didn't get it. Like, you know.
Right.
Anyway, who am I to tell you how to make a record? I'm just saying.
No, but I mean, I think that's probably some along the lines of what we'll end up doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's an exciting thing for a band to change after all this time, like to change the way they do things. It is a time of great change and adaptation. So like I said earlier, I'm just happy you're doing it. It's such a great record. I love this band. Nothing but good feelings, if I may.
So. Oh, that's great. Thank you, Vish.
You're welcome. Now, if people want to learn more about Mudhoney, Plastic Eternity, I assume they should check out subpop.com, I want to say, is the website off the top of my head. I'll link to things. Is there anywhere else?
Yeah.
Anywhere else you'd like to direct them? Any other major corporations we should cite right now for Mudhoney?
The Coca-Cola Company of California, if you know what I mean.
Those days, hopefully, are behind us all.
I can't believe that's the credits of Volume 4 by Black Sabbath.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Forgot about that. No, you're on the socials. You're on those things, I think, right?
Nope, I'm not.
No, sorry. Mudhoney is, I think, right?
Oh, sure.
Follow Mudhoney or like Mudhoney, whatever you're asked to do by these pages of things. That's where I was coming from. And more info at Sub Pop's site. Is that fair, Mark?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, cool.
There's also a Shopify store that we have, mudhoney.org.
Yeah. You got a Bandcamp?
There's a Bandcamp. There's also a store in the UK for people in UK and Europe who can order stuff. I think that's called something like Mudhoney Online.
Oh, yeah. Sounds familiar.
So you won't have to pay the exorbitant shipping fees from the US to Europe. People in New Zealand and Australia are kind of screwed.
Except you're going there.
And South America. We're going there. And actually, the record is getting pressed in Australia as well. So that'll hopefully keep the costs down there.
Sweet. That's awesome. As I recall, you've got some pretty loyal and dedicated fans who tend to some of your online presence. Is that right? Or am I making that up?
Yeah. Our friend Peter Trams. We first met him when he was still in college, does that Mudhoney tour book site that has all of our shows and set lists.
It's amazing.
I mean, the early years are kind of fuzzy and maybe not accurate, but definitely from the point in time where he started keeping track of things, everything is like very accurate. And I'll send him a photo of the set list for every show we do every night, and then he'll put that up.
That's lovely. See, that's amazing. I remember this from.
Yeah.
I remember that. Well, that's great. And I hope people check out Plastic Eternity and go see Mudhoney live. I do want to ask Mark.
Oh, and also our friend Vincent Van Ness in Holland. He monitors like the meta sites, I guess, Facebook and Instagram.
Right. Okay. And they're good
because none of us are savvy enough.
No, they all these folks do a good job is what I'm getting at. It's great. So I think I assume you feel fairly fortunate that you've got this loyal
Group. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
No, it's lovely. As we're speaking, Mark, the record is not out quite yet, but as people are hearing this, it will be soon. If we can go out on a song from Plastic Eternity for them to hear, I wonder if you can pick one for us and also explain maybe why it came to mind.
Well, let's do something that most people won't hear and might be a little bit surprised by.
Sure. Well, what do you have in mind?
I was thinking one or two. That's a song that was also, the music was largely written by Dan on acoustic guitar in an open C tuning and has a kind of a different feel for Mudhoney in general. Like one of the things that kind of reminded us was one of the songs maybe off of Metal, mm-hmm. Pink Floyd's Metal, like has sort of a floaty feeling. So, yeah.
Pretty sparse lyrically, too, in a way.
Yeah, it's got one verse.
Yeah. So that's maybe speaking to that Pink Floyd dreamy saying something, but not like off kilter kind of thing, maybe?
Sure. Yeah. And definitely, you know, like I was thinking of David Gilmour's slide work on One of These Days. So that's the third verse is the homage to David Gilmour.
Oh, nice. You seem a little reflective of your guitar heroes on this record. I mentioned the Tom Herman song. Is that fair? I mean, not across the board. I mean, you've mentioned two instances. I shouldn't generalize, sure. But yeah.
Yeah. David Gilmour does some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
He's a known quantity, unlike Tom Herman.
No, I know, but I just
if you
wondered,
Google Tom Herman, chances are you'll get some sort of football coach.
Yes, I actually tried to do that recently, and that is what I got. I wanted to figure out more about him based on your loving homage, I wondered if there were some lyrical allusions that I may not have gotten. Unless
but that,
I read.
That's the problem. That's the problem. Yeah. Even if you go to like the Wikipedia page for Perubu, he is the only person from the original classic lineup that doesn't have a hyperlink.
Yeah, you can't.
To his own Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that needs to be rectified.
I think anyone can do that. Mark, I think you can do that.
I don't have the tools.
Well, I believe that's the whole point of that site is that anyone can add anyone.
or the patience to figure it out. As you can tell by my lack of computer savvy for setting up this.
You did a wonderful job. Everything's sounding great. And I just want to say that I always feel honored, if I may, to get to speak with you and that you make time for me, Mark. And I think you made extra time for me today. So I want to be mindful of that. Thank you.
Bored people.
No, I don't think we bored. Well, I might have, but not you. I just want to say that. Mark, it means a lot to me, to speak with you. Congrats on Plastic Eternity and good luck on tour and best of luck in the future. I hope we speak again soon.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Vish. It's been a pleasure.
No problem. We're going to go to it now. This is One or Two by Mudhoney. Enjoy.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, it's always so sweet to get to talk to Mark Arm. Mark, thank you so much for being back on this show. For those of you listening out there and unfamiliar, this is the 764th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available almost wherever it is that you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it, like Mark Arm's previous appearances on this show, for example, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can also like Creative Control. Currently, you can do that on Facebook. You can like it in regular. You can just like it. You can walk around saying, you know what? I like that show. I like it. I don't have to tell anyone. I just like it. But you can like it on Facebook. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Vish Creative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at Vish Khanna. Also, please consider visiting patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. All the money that comes in for the show that's clean and good comes from the Patreon people. So thank you to all of you who do this already. If you haven't done so and you want to or can afford to, let me tell you this, $6 American or more a month grants you access to exclusive content, and you get the episodes earlier than everybody else. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, just message me on Patreon at that $6 American or more a month level, and I'll get you a t-shirt of your choosing while supplies last. I know I'm from Canada and I said American, but that's the way the Patreon thing is set up. Maybe I can fix that. I don't know, but it says American. But you don't have to do $6. If you want to do less, if you want to do more, you can, and you can always change it at any point. People do that. It's fine. I just appreciate the support. So once again, please consider supporting the show financially at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and place orders at on their website there, blackbird.ca. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my dear friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on this show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Mark Arm of Mudhoney. I hope you enjoyed it. We went all over the place in some ways, but somehow everything we talked about, everything. The sharks, the surfing, well, maybe not that stuff. A lot of it had to do with the album, and I hope when the album comes out, this conversation might be in the back of your head as you dig in and think, oh yeah, those guys talked about some of these things. So thank you for listening to this episode, for subscribing to Creative Control and asking your friends to do the same, and spreading the word about the show. It means so much. Thank you. I will talk to you very soon. Goodbye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.